Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knock-O-Nation podcast show. Oh. Knock-O-Nation podcast show.
Hey, it's another episode of the Knock-O-Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's Josh Brown.
Hello.
Josh distracted, looking off into space, contemplating the perplexities of life and whether or not he lives in the Matrix. And that's JT Holton.
Hi guys.
If we are in a simulation, one thing I can't figure out is you'd think that we'd be making a simulation, like another simulation. And to my knowledge, we're not.
Isn't that a video game?
Well, in a way it is, but I mean like a real life simulation.
Isn't that Twitter? I mean, in a way. It's like a simulated world that where everyone thinks they matter, but no one really cares what anyone else says.
It's possible.
I mean, I'm just saying. Just throwing it out there, Josh. I know my content's not good enough for you sometimes, but just pouring that out there. Fellas, let me ask you this question to start today's off with today's random question of the day. What are four things that you should never skimp on? Like, you should never go cheap on.
All right. Number one.
I'm listening.
Shoes.
I agree. 100%.
And I know you guys are going to make fun of me because I'm literally wearing Crocs right now, so I get it. Ha 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 ha. But I mean like work shoes.
Yes.
Running shoes in general. I'm not saying get some, you know, $200, you know, Brooks or some Hokas, but like get some good shoes.
But don't get them just to have the shoes. I mean, right. Them if you're actually going to wear them and use them more than once a year. But
yes.
Yeah. Right. Like I mean I agree though, Josh. I really had to twist my own arm to invest $220 in a pair of boots because that sounded insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't think I'll ever buy another pair of boots in my life because I love my Chippewas. And they last twice as long or three times as long as any other boot I've ever owned. And so per year value, they're actually cheaper
right.
than any boot that I've ever owned, and with the exception of like cheap Walmart boots. That are just uncomfortable and painful. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, my Chippewas, I can wear them laced up. I can wear them unlaced. I can slip them on and off. I mean, I love them. And they give me good support, and they don't wear out. And that's something, I mean, like, I work boots. I wear them every day. Like, there's almost 0 days that I go anywhere and don't wear boots. And, I wear the crap out of them, and I'm not gentle with them. Like, I step in the creek with them. I step in the mud with them. You know, like, I've learned there's no sense in, you know, being soft when you're fooling with cows, go the most direct way, walk across whatever you have to walk across to get there, and they hold up. So, yeah, money well spent on those shoes anyway. Now, I don't know how I feel about that for, like, Louis Vuittons or, you know, frou-frou shoes.
I got another
not
one.
Not sure I agree.
Well, I mean, if you wear loafers, you know, for the office, you know.
I can see that.
I got another one. Small purchase item, but charcoal. Sometimes I'm bad about getting some cheap-ass store-brand charcoal bullshit, and it sucks, and it won't light. And then I just pony up and get some Kingsford.
You know the fix for that, though, if it won't light? They actually have a fix for that now. It's called lighter wax, and you can buy the wax real cheap, and you just pour a little bit of the wax on your stuff, and you actually light the wax itself, and it will light even the cheapest charcoal. Works well.
Okay.
Just saying. What about you, JT? What's something that you should never skimp on?
Here's my four things. One is similar to charcoal. When you're buying a grill, don't buy a grill until you've got money saved up to buy a nice grill. Or if you want to be an idiot, go to Lowe's and they'll hook you up with a credit card with a huge interest rate and you can buy whatever grill you want to, which you're going to pay more for. But every $100 you spend on a grill is basically 1 year of use out of it. So if you buy a $100 grill, like when I did, like I got fresh out of college, I bought it was like $100 grill and it was a piece of crap.
You know. I have a $60-$70 Weber that I've had for years, but it's a charcoal grill.
Well, with the charcoal, will that be an exception? I mean, like a gas grill, okay. Like a big old gas grill. Because the Weber's, with an exception, like the oven style hamburger charcoal tailgate type grill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those things can last for a long time.
Yeah, I love my Weber.
Take better care of it in general.
Best charcoal grill we ever had. A guy made for us. He just took some metal. He made like a square box. Charcoal goes in. And then he had, like, two poles with some expanded metal wire on the top that was, like, a set-off grate. Oh, man. And then it had the poles. It had little poles that went up through the things on the side, and you put, like, just a nail through them. And it was by far it's been the best grill we've ever had because you can cook, like, 40 hamburgers on it at one time. You know, it's just huge if you have, like, a big cookout going. It's really slick. And you can put any kind of meat on it that you want to. I don't use that most of the time, but if we do like camping style cookouts, we have it available and works really well. What else, JT?
I'd say also a mattress.
Yes.
That was one of the best life advice I got. My mom was like, once you get a real job, get a real mattress and stop sleeping on whatever hand-me-down you're on. It'll change your life.
That's
true. Invest in a good mattress because you spend a third of your life on it. Toilet paper. Don't go Publix brand. Just buy the Angel Soft, especially in.
He's right.
I think people are realizing that now. And then to me, one thing I can't do is if you, Josh, you're excluded from this. If you drink sodas, if you drink Coke, don't get like
Mountain Thunder,
Kroger brand. Right. Just pay the extra $2 and get something that doesn't taste terrible. You know, there is nothing worse than being like. Go into a friend's house or spend the night, birthday party, and they got pizza, and their mom bought like a bunch of 2 liters of like Dr. K.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, Dr. K. Like, just get Dr. Pepper. It's like one's 99 cents, and the other's
$1.25.
Yeah. Yeah. Just fork over the 50 cents and get the real deal. Because I, being from Georgia, I love drinking a Coca-Cola. I'm not going to drink a big K-Cola. I got some. Once I got some from Aldi. It was like their Mountain Dew, and a 12-pack was 99 cents, which should tell you something about the quality of what they put in them. And it was just like tasted like if you took a flat Mountain Dew and poured half of it, and the rest was tap water, and you swirled it around, and they're like, here. It was vicious.
So I can't speak for myself because I've never actually done this, but. From all the people I've talked to, this is one thing that I've been told. Do not skimp on the cruise. Don't get a crappy, low-end, cheap cruise.
I've never been on a cruise. Mm-hmm. I want to go.
I have not either, but everyone I've ever talked to says good cruises are really good, but they cost a little bit of money. Bad cruises are really bad, and there's a significant difference in the two. That's what I've always been told. Don't skip on the cruise.
Especially now that you're older. When you're younger, you can deal with having the little cabin room with like the pop out bed. Because
you're going to be out drunk the whole time anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now that you're older, you're going to be having the actual room and like with mm-hmm. like a balcony on it. Because the rooms they'll stick you in, they're like, it shouldn't be legal.
I do this for vacation. I don't skimp on vacation. It's the we don't go stupid places, stupid's probably not the right word. We don't go stupid money places like Disney World. Like, we may do that once with our kids while we have kids before they turn 21 kind of thing. That's just not the kind of family that we are. So, like, we do it big for vacation. Like, we don't go blow money on material things, but, like, if I'm going to the beach, I'm going to stay on the beach. I'm not staying two blocks off the beach. I'm staying on the beach. Like, I don't want to walk two blocks. I want to be where I can see the freaking ocean waves, and if a storm comes in, they're going to, like, be in my back door. You know, if we're going on vacation, I don't want to go to some place that's pretend to be the mountains. I want to go to the mountains, you know. I don't want, like, some little cabin in the middle of, you know, that's in the middle of Gatlinburg. I want, like, a cabin up on the mountain on top of Pigeon Forge. You know, like, I'm just saying, like, I promise you it's the best investment I've ever made. And people are like, yeah, but you could go for, like, half the money. And I'm like, yes, you probably could. But I do it once a year. I mean, I don't vacation all the time. I do it, you know, this is the one time I'm going to get to come here for a long time. I don't skip on vacations.
Don't talk bad about Gatlinburg like that, though.
Oh, I like to go to Gatlinburg. I just don't want to stay downtown.
Last time I was in Gatlinburg.
Oh, I've stayed in some of those crappy motels in Gatlinburg.
Yeah, I know.
I played at Sugarlands Distillery, and they put us up in the Gatlinburg Motel right next door. And we thought we were fucking Led Zeppelin. They fed us Italian food, and we got drunk. And
let's play a little skee ball down at Fanny Farkle's.
No. You had a bunch of 60-year-old married women that loved you.
Yes, we did. 100%. Yeah.
That's Gatlinburg, man.
Yep, and I loved it.
Because anyone under the age of 30 that's actually good-looking is there on their honeymoon.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, there's if you're going for chicks, you're out of luck, but unless you're into, like, teenagers and you're the appropriate age, or you like 60-year-old cougars, you know, that
are
into
swinging. My first honeymoon was in Gatlinburg.
Yeah. So. Now if you're a swinger, Helen and Gatlinburg are, like, home base for you. You're like, yeah.
Dude, talk about a good time. I've had more good times in Helen than maybe anywhere. Maybe anywhere. And I'm including Vegas, Chicago, Toronto, San Francisco.
There's some crazy folks in Helen.
Beverly Hills.
You're not talking about my grandmother, are you?
Florida. Like, your boy has thrown down in Helen, Georgia. Oktoberfest 2009, bitches. Let me tell y'all something.
Where are you at?
Unicoi State Park. We'd camp, and there's a mountain bike trail from Unicoi State Park. Literally, it's like 5 miles long-ish. Yeah. A mountain bike trail. You hop on your mountain bike, and you bike to town, and you drink, and then you bike back. It's great. And
drunken biking sounds terrible. I'm just saying. I can barely bike sober. So.
And then, oh, my God, I just had so many good times in it. I love Helen. It's so cheesy.
Where do you like to go in Helen?
So this is how you do Helen.
Because
I can't do Helen anymore.
Like, we'll go eat at Helen, but, like, downtown Helen is terrible. It's
more like an experience. Nothing. Here's how you do Helen. You camp at Raven Falls, which is 10 minutes outside of downtown. If you're going north through downtown Helen and you go up to, like, 365, there's Russell Beast Simmons Parkway or something, and you go through Scorpion Hollow, and
they have a parkway named after Russell Simmons.
Russell B.
Is the head
Russell
of Def B. Jam Records.
It's not Russell Simmons. Russell B.
Seems weird.
Martin? It's some highway.
Rich.
Is
Richard
it the one
B.
where
Russell?
You turn to
Richard
go
B.
Up
Russell.
Towards...
Richard B. Russell. That's
oh,
it.
That's like Lake Richard B. Russell. Yeah.
Well, you can't. There's a place where you can camp, dude, for free along this creek. It's so beautiful. You camp there, and then you just go to Helen you go to Betty's in the morning and get some coffee, Betty's General Store. You stock up on some groceries at Betty's. I love Betty's. You sit on an Adirondack chair outside at Betty's, and you hang out, you drink some coffee. You walk around a little bit.
Now, when you're doing Helen, does Helen know you're seeing Betty, too?
You don't. Yeah, she doesn't know. And then you, okay. And you know, I'll probably admit there's the food. There's not a food ain't 80 grade in Helen. You know, Troll Tavern's okay, but it's Troll Tavern. You get a pitcher of Polliner beer, you get a Wiener Schnitzel, and you know it's you make fun of people floating down the river, and then you go to the leather shop in the middle of town. And there's leather bike stuff. There's like Rebel Flag bikinis for sale. It's really cool. And then in the very back, there's a rack of leather coats. And you move that rack, and there's a door there that says 18 and up, and you must ask to enter. And then you knock on the door. You ask the guy to let you in, and it's a porn shop.
Where?
There's a secret porn shop in downtown Helen.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I read about it in a book once, and it's true. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it, listeners. You now know where the downtown porn shop is in Helen. Fellas, let's talk a little bit more about The Last Dance. We talked a little bit in yesterday's episode. Fellas, have you ever lied to yourself to motivate yourself to whip someone's butt? Because MJ did it, you know. The LeBradford, whatever his name is, story where where MJ basically makes up this story about this kid saying good game, Michael, when he had a bad game, and then MJ going out and then the next game matching the other kid's crazy game in the first half. Do you guys ever lie to yourself that way to like make yourself more motivated?
Yeah, I think I've been guilty of that before a little bit. I think I've been guilty of kind of inventing stuff to make me pissed off, perhaps.
What about you, JT?
Not really. I don't know. I don't get motivated by, I don't know, other people sliding me. I want to be liked by people. I don't, that doesn't get me going. But it doesn't surprise me, like, the people. The first thing I thought about when I saw that part was, I think this is just something that people at the pinnacle of sports have to do to fight boredom too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because
I can see it.
Because you can't. It's like when Bill Belichick is talking in the playoffs, and he's like, "Well, you know, no one really believes us in us, and no one thinks we should be here." And it's like, "You're the freaking Patriots! Like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, you know, going into the Super Bowl and Bill Belichick's like, no one says we have a chance. Like, you're the Patriots. Of course you have a great chance of winning. What's wrong with you? You're favored to win the game." But it's like you have to find that edge or else they're afraid of, like, ever being complacent and those kind of things. Like, Michael Jordan has to find a way because everyone else is telling him how great he is. So yeah. He has to make it up.
Yeah.
You know, like.
The George Carl thing, the George Carl like ignoring him and not talking to him.
George Carl probably was just daydreaming. Probably was just that, look, you know, he's got a lot going on.
If George stops and talks to him, how much do you want to bet he finds something in George talking to him to motivate him?
Yeah, George is just probably trying to just respect his privacy, and knowing that, you know, it's he's in the game mode. You know, we'll talk after the game. You know, like, but he's gonna find. But that's what makes him great. You know, he's gonna find everything. Every possible slight to think like people don't believe in me or like, yeah. Cause at a certain point you're Michael Jordan, like you're supposed to win.
Yeah.
And I think that was what Michael was afraid of, is thinking that I'm supposed to win championships and I should be winning championships. And I'm just going to win because I'm that good. He can't allow himself to think in that way. Cause then he'll let up, you know?
Mm hmm.
Like, I'm the best player in the world.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like, for sure. He was really good at motivating himself. There's no doubt. Like, it was pretty crazy to see. So yeah, I was.
I think that's part of why he was on his teammates so hard, too.
Yeah.
Because it held them accountable. And so now he's got to deliver because he's such a jerk. During practice, now he's got to he forced himself to, now I've got to deliver the goods. I can't be this much of an ass to my coworkers and not deliver a championship.
Like,
it
yeah,
forced
yeah.
him to hold himself accountable to win it. Because the whole point of doing this is to win the championship. The whole point of me being a total jerk to you guys is that at the end of the year we'll be sipping champagne and we'll be the champions. And so it kind of backed him, it kind of painted him in a corner where, like, I got to win a championship for these guys or else everyone's going to hate me. Like, if I don't show up in the playoffs and I've been a complete jerk to everybody all year, you know, this, they're going to revolt and, you know, this whole thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you guys this. Who have you, first of all, have you ever had someone in your life that was a complete a-hole like Michael? You know, especially like a teammate, but that you're super glad they were. Like, have you ever had...
super glad?
Yeah, yeah. Like, have you ever had that a-hole in your life that you're really glad they were on your team and were an a-hole to you like Michael was? Because, I mean, let's be serious. The Bulls don't win six championships without Michael. Maybe they win one during all that span. You know, maybe... they don't win six, you know, without him being that guy. I don't know that they win any, but they definitely don't win six. Have you ever had that guy in your life?
Hmm.
Or girl?
I don't think so.
No, I remember Billy Schwab being a real jerk to play basketball with in eighth grade because he acted like Michael Jordan does in practice during, like, you know, just a random pickup game in basketball in the gymnasium. And I was like, what's wrong with this kid? He's a nut. No, not that I can think of. I've had, like, bosses that would do, kind of like Jordan, would do everything. Like, he wasn't going to ask you to do anything he wouldn't do. And he was, and he hated it. Like, you worked hard, and you worked a butt ton. But... he was like, hey, but you're going to make a lot of money. And at some points I dreaded it because I was working like 12 days in a row. But he was like, the way I do things, we're all going to be very successful. But it sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Because, you know, he said, you know, winning has its price, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the, that was the price of success to Michael Jordan was... you're going to be miserable at some points, but in the end, you'll be grateful. So.
Yeah. So, Josh, you never had anybody like that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I think I've had a couple people like that. Josh Brown's one of them. I mean, let's be honest.
That's true.
total a-hole, but in a good way. I really thought Josh was going to say Ben. I really thought you would have said your brother. I thought that was coming, but your brother, no.
No.
Not really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. I'm trying to think if there's anybody that's ever been on me that hard. Say T with a phrasing joke. I saw it. There probably has been, but it's been like, since high school that I've had somebody, you know, in high school, I probably had somebody that was that hard on me, but since then I don't think there's been anybody that stands out.
Well, I went to a prep school here. Like, it's a Catholic school and you had homework in like seven classes a night. That's hard to like fathom when you're like 13, you know, of like why I have to do all this stuff. And then by the time I got older and I went to public school, and especially then in college, I was like, oh, this is a breeze. This isn't even hard. Like, what's wrong with you guys? You know, at the time I hated it, but having to lug
mm-hmm.
a backpack full of textbooks and do 2 hours of homework every night prepped me for like, hey, when it's easy. Then it gets really easy because you're ready for it, you know?
I definitely had a few teachers that were that way, especially in college. I remember Dr. Butts was one of my teachers. He was...
Seymour?
Yeah, I wish. That was a super hard class. I made a C- in it and was super happy to have made a C-. I remember that was the first college class that I studied for the test. I took the test, and I made a 28. On the paper, on the Ooh. Test, and I was in the top 10% of the class, and I was like, ooh, that was rough. But he was a great teacher. It was just super hard. It was like it was biology, I think, or chemical. I don't remember exactly. It was some sort of anatomy and biology sort of class, and it was brutal. And then I remember I had a summer. I actually took several classes with this guy, Dr. Rufo, and I took a summer class, 6-week summer class at the University of Georgia, called The Anatomy of Fascism. And I had to read 800 pages a night. 800. I'm not kidding you. 800 pages a night. And, obviously you're not actually reading every page of that. You're just, like, speed skimming reading and everything to try to survive. It's literally, like, treading water to try to keep up, you know, dog paddling to not drown. But it was one of the best classes I ever took. It was phenomenal. But, yeah, I remember a little bit of that. What do we think about Scottie Pippen quitting?
I thought it was it's kind of a cool story. He was a bitch for quitting. It was stupid. But, like, it was kind of cool how he realized that he was a bitch and he felt remorseful. And the team loved him so much that they didn't, like, it was kind of cool. It was kind of like this precious moment where, like, everybody knew that he fucked up. He knew he fucked up.
But then he said he wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, that was not cool. That was not cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he would. I think it's just because what he's saying is that competitive nature, that stuff like that is going to piss you off.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes can't change that mindset or else they feel like they wouldn't be successful. Like, that being a total dork and not going in the game because you feel like you're being passed over on the team and pitching a fit about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I looked like a baby. But that attitude of I'm the best and I need to take the last shot, that's why I'm successful.
Yeah, but it's
that's
also
why
you're
a multi-time All-Star and a Hall of Famer.
I also think, though, that's why you're Scottie Pippen and you're not Michael Jordan.
But if Michael Jordan doesn't exist, Scottie Pippen is a top 50 all-time NBA player. It's
yes,
like,
yes, but he's Scottie Pippen. And Michael Jordan, there were times, a few, that Michael Jordan did not get the last shot, and he didn't pitch a fit on the bench. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, I bet he did in private, though.
Oh, yeah, in private you can do it all day long. I don't have a problem with being mad you didn't get the ball. You don't sit on the bench in the playoffs. And
yeah, it was a bad look.
Yeah, you can't do that. It's like his teammates – I mean, Bill Cartwright crying is a little weird, but nonetheless,
but
you're
these guys have been emotionally, like, completely
seriously, I mean,
bulldozed by Michael Jordan for a year. They're all like head cases at this point.
Yeah.
So,
and Michael's not there. I mean, do you think Scotty sits if Michael's there? No way. No way.
Yeah, he wouldn't allow it.
No.
He wouldn't allow it.
Michael would look at him and say, "Get your butt up, boy," except he would have used like 15 cuss words in between.
Scotty Pippen, you ho.
Yeah. Scotty Pippen, you ho.
Michael Jordan calling people ho has been my favorite thing of that past episode. Like, I love it.
How good is Unfiltered Sports? How good is Unfiltered Sports?
It's especially the NBA. It's outstanding.
Yes.
Like, because the close knit you get when you only have a team of 12 guys. Mainly, you know, like the bond, you get 82 games plus extra in the playoffs, and you've got this, you know, basically it's like going to summer camp. You don't have a 56-man roster like in the NFL, you know. You don't have all these guys in baseball. You've got 5 or 6 guys that will be coming or going at any point during the team. Some guys speak, you know, Dominican, you know, whatever, Spanish, and some guys, you know. So you have little cliques. In basketball, for the most part, everybody speaks English, and you got 12 guys, so it's everybody gets to know each other, and there's this, like, camaraderie that's hilarious. Like, it's just refreshing to see, like watch it last week's episode when they got to the play, when they were playing the Magic, and they were giving Horace Grant a hard time before the tip-off, you know. Like, oh, you've met this guy before? Yeah, like, we used to see him in the playoffs. I don't think we'll see him this year, though. You know, stuff like that was just really cool to see, like, just interaction and having a good time. It was fun. That's really cool to peel back that curtain and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's I understand why you can't leave all sports unfiltered, because at the end of the day, there is a brand and people are in the heat of the moment and things are going to get said that are probably inappropriate from time to time. And I mean, beyond just cuss words, but I mean, it's just like, I don't want somebody digging back in every person's old tweets to try to find something that's not right because it doesn't line up with everything, you know. In today's culture, it's the same reason that, like, I don't like people going back and trying to change history and tell me why presidents were bad because they had slaves, or why this was bad because they didn't respect women and want them to vote, or why so-and-so was bad because fill in the blank. It's like, none of that. I don't care, because the culture was different at that time, you know, so stop trying to, like, go back and retroactively change culture to tell me how certain things were bad and that makes the person bad. In the same way, I understand, like, baseball, you can't have every last conversation be available to everybody constantly, but man, mm-hmm. it's refreshing when it's not canned and not covered and not controlled and clean, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, I remember,
it's not just the cussing either, it's the unfiltered feel, you know,
conversation.
Yeah.
I remember when the Celtics won the championship, and it was when they had Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. They interviewed Kevin Garnett after winning it, and, you know, he finally won an NBA championship, a Hall of Fame player, and he yelled out, "Anything is possible." And it felt like that's something he came up with 15 years ago and said, no matter what, when I win a championship and they put a microphone on my face, I'm just going to yell this out. Like, he's trying to make a catchphrase. And it was so canned and so dumb and so, like, I think he thought that was going to go on T-shirts everywhere and everybody in Boston was going to be wearing an Anything Is Possible shirt. And it was going to be he was going to make something, like, put something in pop culture. And I just remember thinking, like, that's so dumb. You just want to, why would you have such a canned response, such a cliched answer to, like, one of the biggest moments of your life, you know? Whereas with Michael Jordan, like, watching this, like, you could tell, like, nothing about him is, like, premeditated. Nothing about him is inauthentic. Like,
yeah.
Everything about him is just, he is absolutely real.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people are drawn to, is the authenticity of Michael Jordan. Like, you see it in his conversations off the cuff. You see it in the way he is in practice, how he admits to everything, and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He just is who he is, and he's like, I'm just a guy that wants to win basketball games.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not here to become a movie star. I'm not here to parlay this into a bigger thing. I'm not here to be an activist. I'm not here to date celebrities and be in People magazine mm-hmm. and be this phenomenon. I'm not here to be Muhammad Ali. I'm not here to be David Beckham. Like, I just want to win championships.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
In the process of that, everybody really liked him because he's just cool.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy.
Was the, changing gears a little bit, were the 95-96 Bulls the best team to ever play the game?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. But
probably.
Oh, yeah.
At least in our lifetime, you know.
Play 82 games of any sport and try to win 72 of them.
Who would you put up against that? Would the Golden State team even be close?
I think it'd be close. Big reason is Steve Kerr would be coaching them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be weird.
What about Kobe Shaq's team? Lakers?
That would be interesting. It's Shaq at that point, the physical force of nature, and then you got a guy like Kobe who is idolized and downright copied to a T, Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm curious. I would like to see, I don't think this team was remotely as good, but it would be interesting to see the Heat with LeBron and Dwayne Wade when Wade was still pretty strong, and And Chris, what was it? Bosch.
Chris Bosch.
Yeah.
Chris
Bosch. Bosch was such a stud. He should have been really good in college, but instead he only played 1 year at Georgia Tech and left. Yeah.
He was ugly.
Yeah, I just, Michael Jordan at his peak, the peak of his powers, and adding in Rodman and, oh my gosh, all the role players on the team, Scottie Pippen, who is, you know, a top 50 player all time in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably the best coach in basketball history.
Sure. That's where the Lakers are interesting, because they had the same coach, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's really what makes them the real question mark.
I loved how Jordan could turn it on and hit like 7 threes in a row. Like, I don't know if there's –
yeah.
Like, LeBron couldn't do that, I don't think. Like, MJ could do – I thought that was awesome. How he's not really a three-point guy, but if he wants to just show off, like, it's almost like – you ever heard, like, Ichiro in batting practice would just hit dingers? Just to fuck with people, just because he could, and that's Michael Jordan. He's just such a freak. He just, you know, I'm gonna fuck with people now. I'm gonna hit a bunch of threes.
That's the way I felt when they showed him the Gary Payton clip.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He died laughing, because you know what that told me?
That was a real laugh too. That wasn't like a bullshitting.
No, he was 100% laughing.
Right.
You know what I think Michael decided? I truly believe this. And tell me if I'm wrong. But I think Michael decided he wanted to win the championship on Father's Day. And he threw the game.
Absolutely.
He threw the game against Peyton.
I wouldn't say threw the game, but I think he probably didn't give max effort.
I think he wanted to lose. I think he wanted to lose that game so he could win on Father's Day.
I think it was a little bit when Mayweather fought Conor McGregor. And he got it to like the, I think it was the eighth round, because that's where Mayweather had bet on himself to win in the eighth round. So he was kind of like, all right, six, seven round. I could end it if I wanted to, but I'm going to end it in the eighth because I'm going to make more money. I think it's kind of like that. Like, we could win tonight, but we're already up, you know, 3-0. You know, let's make it interesting.
Yeah, Gary Payton thinking that he actually held LeBron, and I mean held Michael, and then Michael laughing. What? How angry is Gary Payton today after watching that last night?
He's got to feel like dog shit. It made him look so dumb, because they built it up perfectly, because he thought he really had a case, you know, you know, he was kind of tooting his own horn. He was kind of, up until now, he's probably like legit proud of himself. Because
hey,
like,
that Supersonics team was good.
That was awesome. Sean Kemple is a badass too. So like,
yes.
Yeah. So like, you know, to this day, he probably felt like he held off Michael Jordan for one game. Like, and he made himself think that Michael still thinks about that maybe. And like,
my question is this: why in the heck did you not have Gary Payton on Michael Jordan that whole series?
Right? Gary Payton, one of the best defenders in NBA history.
Right.
Hands
like,
down.
Why wouldn't you have him on MJ? And I get the offensive thing, but if you stop Michael Jordan, you beat the Bulls. Period.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way you win the series.
Why change anything once you're down 3-0? Why wait till three? Why wait till you're down 3-0?
Well, it sounds like Gary basically said, "F you, Carl. I'm doing it myself." You know, like,
yeah.
I didn't get that one. You know, man, I think George Carl is a great coach, but like that one was like, what? Why did you do that? That made no sense to me. I think speaking of that team, Sean Kemp and Vince Carter, two best dunkers I ever remember, consistently.
Yeah.
Violent dunkers. Violent.
Going back a little bit further, but Dominique Wilkins that we put in there.
Yeah.
I remember
Neek being really good, and I remember him dunking violently because I remember him breaking backboards and stuff. I still don't remember him consistently being as just violent as Sean Kemp was and Vince Carter.
Yeah, Kemp was kind of a like, he wasn't a well-rounded player. Like, he could do a couple things really, really, really well, and one of them was jump through the roof.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, hey, feed me down here, and I'm going to jump up and just slam it down.
Do you guys remember Vince Carter jumping over the French player in the Olympics when he was still in college?
Yeah, he was like 7'2", I think the guy was.
Do you remember that, Josh? Did you ever see that?
I don't think so.
I'll find a clip of it for you, because it's
I don't think it was the Olympics, but it was some sort of, might have been the Olympics. I don't know.
I think he was an amateur. Sort of, yeah. It was the Olympics, or at least like, I don't know if it was truly the Olympics or if it was like, yeah, it was Olympics. It was 2000 like Olympics. Yeah.
2000. Okay.
2000 Olympics.
So he was playing. He was in the NBA then.
Yes, he was like, but he was not playing. It was not an NBA game. It was an Olympic game.
Right.
So, excuse me.
Yeah, he cleared a guy at 7'2", and
here you go, Josh.
Jumped right over his dang head. It was incredible.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's just so brutal. I mean, when you and this was when Vince Carter still had like lots of hair. Vince Carter, though, probably the best dunker of my lifetime, consistently.
Yeah, he did the one at the slam dunk contest when Tracy McGrady still played for the Raptors, so that must have been 99,
mm-hmm.
I think it was. Cause yeah, summer of 2000, McGrady signed with the Magic. So it had to be like 99. McGrady's his cousin and like helped him like, you know, hold the ball, and he did like a under the leg. Oh,
what I remember is when he stuck his elbow.
Stuck it, yeah, hung by the elbow off the
rim. In the hoop. Oh my gosh, it was insane. Yeah. Hidden gem, if you watch The Last Dance this week, I'll tell you one of the best basketball teams most people don't remember, and that was that 94 Florida team. They were good. The Orlando Magic with Shaq, Penny Hardaway, Horace Grant, that team mm-hmm. was – as a kid, that was one of my favorite teams. I loved
Scott
that team.
Scott Skiles once had a 30-assist game
for
that team.
Yeah,
They had some players, man. Nick Anderson, a friend of mine in high school, Marty, his older sister, probably about like 8 years older than us, was a cheerleader for the Magic back in the late 90s-ish, 96, 97. Allegedly said Nick Anderson had to tape it to his leg so he could play.
Oh, my goodness. So,
yeah, there's your Nick Anderson. Sorry.
Wow. So, well, JT would do.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I still think of that one. He told me that story, and now anytime I see Nick Anderson, I'm halfway looking.
To be fair, I always just assume that. To his leg. I assume that's how JT has to do it to podcast with us, is tape it to his leg. I assume that's.
My microphone?
Something like that. Yeah. Oh. Speaking of my mic. I just thought this week was so good. I thought it was such a good series.
Yeah.
Fellas, did you catch any of the Joe Burrow interview with the Barstool Sports guys?
No, I'm not a big Barstool
guy. I'm not either.
So
I'm not either, but they did ask Joe about being a multimillionaire living at home in his parents' bedroom, in his bedroom that still has Star Wars curtains. And he said a year ago he bought a new comforter and sheets, that he had Star Wars comforter and sheets up until about a year ago when he bought some more normalized sheets. He does have two Star Wars posters on his wall, he said.
That's actually kind of fun. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah. It's kind of weird. Like, you're making probably, what, $20 million? I don't know what his contract will end up being, but it's probably $20 to $30 billion.
Well, that's the thing. It's like
living at home with your parents in your Star Wars themed bedroom. He could be a Braves blogger. Let's be honest.
But here's the thing. It's like, okay, you're like, well, why didn't he buy a big house? And it's like, well, I'm 22. I don't know how to buy a house. And then it's like, well, ask your parents. They could probably give you some advice. Yeah, but they never bought a mansion before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, things are different. Like, it's like, who do you go to be like, you know, it's especially at 22. Like, I couldn't do my own laundry at 22. I don't know what I would do with all that money. Like, do I go to a car dealership and just hand them a briefcase full of cash and be like, give me that Ferrari? I don't know how to do this.
See, I never,
is all that money in my checking account.
As much
like,
as I love
Ferraris, $22 million in my checking account.
As much as I love Ferraris, if you're a football player, why are you buying a Ferrari? You can't fit in it. Why would you?
I don't know.
You need a big car. You need a big car.
Because if I have $20 million, I can spend $100,000 and be like, I don't really need it.
That's why you see all these like really rich people, and none of them are sports athletes that have like super high-end cars for the most part, because you literally can't get in them. They're made for tiny people. Because everyone knows that the only person that buys a super high-end car is the little guy that had to prove that he had a bunch of money because he has little man syndrome.
Yeah, I wonder if Shaq can only drive Hummers or something. Like, what else?
Seriously, like, what else can he fit in? It's got to be customized. Could you imagine Shaq trying to get into a Porsche 911? I mean...
Right, or just a Corvette.
Yeah.
Like, enjoy that.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah. Good luck. So, for today's episode, I wanted to take a moment. And Josh and JT, you guys have been doing quarantine files and interviews with lots of people. But I want to take a moment, and I want to interview you two guys for just a moment.
Oh, God.
So, to begin with, Josh and JT, what's the last books that you've read of late?
The last ones I just finished was some Francis Chan books.
That's a good book. That's good books.
Yeah. Currently reading Blue Light Jazz by Donald Miller for like the second time in my life. Yeah, there's a throwback for you.
Good book.
Yeah. So
it became a movie. It became a movie.
It did.
That book.
Which I didn't do very
well. That book. I've got so many memories. You don't even know. Yeah. You. Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Okay.
It seemed like a very Josh Brown book.
I remember going to – so I read that book in like – maybe 2004, 2005. Let me start you with my Donald Miller journey real quick, JT. Senior year of high school, I discovered a book called Prayer and the Art of Volkswagen Maintenance.
Yes, yes, right. Good book.
And I read it, and it changed my little impressionable 18-year-old life, and I decided to move to Oregon, and I worked at this camp called Camp Walani in Veneta, Oregon. I got a job as a lifeguard. And I lived in a yurt
and
did weird things.
Smoked a lot of pot.
And
yeah.
Didn't watch baseball for a while. Then I come back. I get back into college. And then a couple years later, he puts out Blue Light Jazz, which is, at this point, he's an author at this point. He's an author, and that's like a formidable book. Whereas the other one was, it was a good book, but it was not like a professional-ish book. But yeah, I read that book. And then... After that book, I go back to Portland to reconvene with some camp friends that I'd made in the summer of 2002. So it's now like 2005. I go back to Portland, and I just read Blue Light Jazz, and I was obsessed about finding places that were in that book. So I'm like, I got to go to Laurelhurst. So I remember like going to Laurelhurst and seeing like the Joan of Arc statue and be like, oh my God, there's the Joan of Arc statue that Donald Miller talks about. And I found his house because he was he's like famous, I guess, now, but like he said where his house was in that book. It was like on the corner of the street. And I'm like, holy shit, that's his house. And I found his church. I didn't go to his church, but I found where his church was. I forget the name of the church, but anyways, yeah, it made me obsessed
Josh
with Portland.
Donald Miller.
I used to love Donald Miller, and now he.
Did you go to Reed? Did you go to Reed College and run naked at their party?
Yeah. So now Donald, because I've followed Donald Miller on Facebook since like 2006 or something, you know. And now, if you follow Donald Miller, he like it's weird because he's like a corporate marketing guy. You'll see these like 1 minute long motivational marketing videos, and it's like Donald Miller giving you advice for your company on how to like improve your SEO and stuff. It's very weird. It's like you're the same Donald Miller that wrote about like like the Joan of Arc statue. It's so weird.
That's funny.
All right, last book I read was Miracle of New Orleans by Brian Kilmeade.
What's it about?
Andrew Jackson.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Kilmeade, a historian or fiction?
No,
historical fiction. Kilmeade
is a Fox News contributor.
Fox News,
he also has a radio show. I got this book because I wanted. So I went down a Brian Kilmeade rabbit hole. He wrote a book called The Tripoli Pirates about Thomas Jefferson going to basically the Middle East to try to make peace with these guys. The Middle East was going crazy, and this is before we knew kind of what like radical Islam was and stuff. So like at this point we're pretty green to it. We just know this stuff's going on, and Jefferson's like, I'm gonna go handle it. He comes back, he reports to the U.S. government. He's like, hey, guys, I don't think you understand. Like, they have this book. It's called the Quran. And, like, I read it and stuff. And, like, you can't, like, negotiate with these people. and like, so he has this Quran, and he basically learns about Islam and learns that it's not good and you cannot negotiate with them. And so that's kind of what the book is about. Funny story. They still have the Quran that Jefferson owns. Now, if you understand history and you, if you've read about, and it's not just, there's other stories about this. It's not just this one book, and this is documented that he had learned these things about, you know, the Islamic world, these not good things. He buys a Quran that to help him validate. He validates basically the bad things that he learned when he was over there. And now the Quran is kept in Congress, and they used it to what's the Muslim lady's name? She's like in Congress.
Ilhan Omar.
Yes, they swore her in on Thomas Jefferson's Quran, and spun it to where, like, Thomas Jefferson, you know, embraced things like this. And how cool is it that he would own a Quran? And we've got this Muslim member now, you know, like, swearing in on it. How cool is that? You know, and it's like, you motherfuckers.
Somewhere Thomas Jefferson's rolling over
exactly.
in his grave, right?
Exactly. But anyways, Kilmeade writes some pretty good books.
Okay. I do know who you're talking about now that you mentioned him. Like, I don't watch Fox News, so I wasn't familiar with him right off, but I do. Now that you mention him, I think I do know who he is.
He's more of a radio guy. He's a radio guy more than anything.
I got you. Right? He's kind of ugly, right? Like, not a
face for radio.
Yeah. Okay. There's not many people that I think that description actually works on, but he seems like one of them.
I've got two more books about Andrew Jackson that I haven't read yet, but that I got at McKay's actually. But like, this book's really good because Andrew Jackson's interesting because obviously Trail of Tears. Like, bad deal, not a good thing. Like, you know, you can, if you look back on Andrew Jackson through the lens of 2020, you're like, what a piece of shit. But then, like, when you read about him and you learn, like, okay, he grew up in the late 1700s in Upper Carolina, which is North Carolina now, basically. Like, it would have been, like, near Clemson, maybe, or near Charlotte, maybe. And the Brits burned down his uncle's house, okay. They burned down his other uncle's house.
So he's basically the guy for the Patriot.
Basically. It's like 1790s. The Brits are just making your life miserable if you live anywhere on the East Coast in one of these colonies, right? And, the Brits were they were terrible people. They burned down houses and churches and shit. I mean, they were horrible. Anyways, years later, he kind of by accident becomes a general. Actually, he got into law and then got into politics. He ended up becoming a general kind of by accident without any military training. He's en route to New Orleans to defend New Orleans. While he's on his way to New Orleans, he has a run-in with the Choctaw Indians in Mississippi, tries to build a relationship with them and work something out. Well, those motherfuckers started siding with the Brits. And so that's why he ended up hating the Indians, because they, many of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, would actually side with the Brits in the early 1800s. And so if you understand why he hates the Brits, you kind of understand, okay, that's why he, you know, it's 1815. That's why a guy like that would hate the Indians. And then when he became president, he was like, you know, they must be removed. And obviously it's you know. Anyways, interesting guy.
Interesting. Yeah. What's your favorite book you've ever read, Josh?
My favorite book I've ever read.
I mean, no one's going to, like, hold it against you if you decide later that it was a different one, but...
Yeah, depending on my mood.
Deciding which Goosebumps to go with.
Yeah. It's like, am I a Bears fan today? Am I a Yankees fan today? Am I a Cardinals fan today? Josh is...
Probably, it's not... So, it's... Like, my favorite book's probably not the best book, you know? It's like the best written book or anything like that. Yeah, but probably... Yeah. And it's kind of cliche because there's a part in one of my favorite movies where the lead actor's like, this is my favorite book, which is also my favorite book, but probably Cash by Johnny Cash.
Nice. Okay. I hadn't read that one, actually.
It's so cool. Like, cool. The stories he tells about, like, Roy Orbison.
Yeah.
Like, him and Roy Orbison were, like, best friends. They lived in the same neighborhood.
Do you know that I did not realize Roy Orbison died in, like, 89? In my head, Roy Orbison died in, like, 72.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know why.
It's kind of weird, yeah. Yeah, they just put out, like, before he died, they put out this black and white documentary music thing about him on PBS, and I remember watching that. Like,
Bruce Springsteen's in it. Well, like, JT, you referenced the Traveling Wilburys. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, you mentioned the Traveling Wilburys. They had done, like, what, 3 or 4 albums? And he was one of the key parts of that.
His voice, man.
Then he died. But, like, I think Roy Orbison, like, Pretty Woman is, like, in my mind, Pretty Woman was always, like, a 60s song.
Right.
And so, like, I always think that he died, like, late 60s or something, and that's what American Pie is about.
Well, him and Johnny were, like, really tight, and they lived in the same neighborhood together. And Johnny tells a story about how they were hanging out one night, and Roy was like, hey, Johnny, you ever seen the pictures of the old presidents from, like, the early 1800s with the ponytail and with the bow? Like, the slick back hair, ponytail with the bow, you know, like Jefferson?
Uh-huh.
And Johnny was like, yeah. And Roy was like, I want to cut my hair like that. And Johnny Cash was like, my wife would kill me. There's no way. And then and then, like, Johnny Cash goes out of town. He plays to some shows or something. And then he dies. Roy Orbison dies. And then he shows up to the funeral. And he's in the casket. And he's got the bow in his hair. he had done that haircut.
Nice. What about you, JT? Favorite book?
Canned Answer would be the Bible.
Oh, I'm gonna throw this bottle at you.
I would say two books I've probably read more than any other would be Brennan Manning's A Ragamuffin Gospel.
That's a good book.
And Jimmy Buffett's A Pirate Looks at 50.
Nice.
Which I've read that book 10 times through.
It's seriously?
Like 700 pages.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Jimmy Buffett's awesome. Yeah, it's great. And it's just him turning. It's his autobiography he wrote when he turned 50, and talks about him, you know, crashing a plane and how he got started and playing in bars and, you know, just, you know, he was going to be like a legit country singer. He lived in Nashville and was going to be a straight-laced country music guy. And his first album was not, you know, beachy. It was very country. And then Jerry Jeff Walker took him down to Key West, and he was like, I think I'm just going to stay here. He lived on a sailboat for a while. He took his record advance check and bought a sailboat. And his accountant is like, why are you wasting all your money? He's like, well, this is insurance. Like, if I lose everything, this thing's paid in full. I can just live on this. Okay.
Easy enough.
That's just kind of how we went, yeah.
We'll get to this. Has been getting to know more about Josh and JT, and we'll do this again and find out more about you guys over the coming weeks. But last question, fellas, to get ready to wrap this thing up. Our spiritual advisor asked an interesting question on Twitter today, and I was meditating on it, and I wanted us to be able to talk about it. John D. Howard, that is, he asked, who were the coolest players of your lifetime? And he had referenced Michael Jordan and the kid, the one and only Ken Griffey Jr. But who are other players from our lifetime that were cool? And I mean, like, not just a little bit cool, but like, I don't know, like, icon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not like because they were good on the field.
Right. Like they.
But because you wanted to be.
Exactly.
When I think of this question, I think of, like, okay, an 8-year-old, what athlete does an 8-year-old boy want to be? It just thinks it's cooler than shit for not just a year, but like 3 to 5 years. So.
Yeah.
I got a couple.
Or longer.
So I've got a couple.
But not, yeah. Again, like JT said, not just because they were good at the sport.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and get the one out of the way that I don't know if you agree with fully, but I think that kids thought he was cool as shit for a long time. But Tiger Woods, I think he made golf cool. Another one at the top of my list, I mean, maybe top three all time. This is a hot take, but Tony Hawk. Mm-hmm. I also, after giving it more thought, I also would put Bo Jackson up there. I think early 90s, like,
definitely.
Every boy in America just thought he was the coolest dude in the
Bo
world.
Bo Knows campaign, yeah. Was...
Can you imagine
that poster of him in shoulder pads, yeah, with the bat?
Can, yeah, you imagine, yeah, if Bo had played on a big market baseball team and not Kansas City?
Oh, yeah. Like, if he played for the
Yankees. I mean, he was huge anyway. Don't get me wrong. But if Bo had played for the Yankees or even the Braves or Chicago, like, nationwide viewing, one of the national teams, you know.
Imagine if Bo Jackson played for the Rams and the Raiders, or excuse me, the Raiders and the
Dodgers,
the Angels, or the Dodgers at the,
oh,
same time.
God.
Yeah,
it was basically doing what Deion did, but to a bigger extent, because Bo Jackson was a better baseball player than Deion Sanders was, and
he
never got hurt.
I don't know. I think he was.
Dude, you gotta look, like, bro. I don't know. Look, just take a gander at, like, 1992 Deion Sanders. It'll blow your mind.
Bo was better.
He could hit 300.
But like Deion probably had a better career.
Yeah, Deion was
freaking
savage.
He didn't, you know, have an artificial hip.
I know.
Well, before
Bo Jackson's the only player with a fake body part to hit a home run in a baseball
hot
game.
Hot take. Deion, listen. I love Bo Jackson, okay? But Bo Jackson was a 250-260 guy-ish, 20 to 30 dingers. Not even like a 40-50 mm-hmm. dinger guy.
But Bo Jackson had a cannon that could throw people out at home plate.
That's also
flat-footed.
True. That's also true.
Yeah.
But Deion, yeah, dude, Deion could rake, man. People forget that. He could rake.
I think Deion, I don't know. Where did he go? Was it Cincinnati that he went after,
yeah,
the Braves? I want to say it was.
Like,
I
in 92.
There were some lost years in baseball.
All right, in 92, Deion Sanders hit 304. I know it's batting average.
How many
really
games,
care,
though?
Yeah, 97 games. Yeah. But then.
Do you know that Bo was the original Aaron Judge?
No.
He batted. He had a better batting average, but, like, he, in 1989, he was an All Star. He had 39 walks, 172 strikeouts. He batted .256.
He was ahead of his time.
And he hit 32 home runs.
Deion in the 92 World Series is like one of the best.
But, Josh, the difference, this is the thing about Bo that hurt him. He only played 135 games that year, and he struck out 172 times.
172 times? Good Lord.
That was a much bigger deal then than it would be now. Now,
yeah,
you'd be like, ah, whatever. Who cares?
So the fact that Bo played both sports, he played less games. Mm-hmm. So his numbers, like you say, he was only a 30 home run guy. But if he plays the other 32 games, he's probably a 40 to 50 home run guy for his career, like every year.
All right. Yo, let me wax philosophic about 1992 Deion Sanders, because I'm obsessed right now. Sorry. Dude hits 304, okay? Stole 26 bases. Led the NL with 14 triples in 97 games. That's stupid.
that is crazy.
In the 92 World Series, Neon Deion hits .533 with four dingers, eight hits, two doubles, an RBI, while playing with a broken foot.
They should have won that World Series, dadgummit.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the best Braves team.
The,
that 92 Braves team was
it
stupid,
is,
man.
And it's probably the most overlooked Braves team.
It is.
Everybody thinks they should have won in 91,
and then
they should have won in 96, and they definitely should have.
And then
in
95, obviously, but yeah, 92.
Yeah,
dude.
92 was the best team,
mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah. I think Deion's up there. Talking about cool players,
I think Ricky Henderson is way up there, because everybody wanted to be Ricky. You know, like
the gear shifting, getting out of the batter's box right into first. Who thinks of that?
Like, when I was 8 or 9 years old, and hanging out with my boys and playing baseball, here are the players that I remember we would always talk about and trade cards about, right? Ken Griffey Jr., Frank Thomas.
Yeah.
A lot of Frank Thomas. Honestly.
But Frank Thomas, I don't know that Frank Thomas was cool.
I don't either. No,
like,
no, I don't either.
Frank Thomas was a savage.
No charisma.
Agreed. But, like, it's 1994. I'm in Cedartown, Georgia, and it's like 80% of the conversation was always with me and my baseball buddies. It was like Ken Griffey Jr. and Frank Thomas. And then the rest was like, was like Tony Gwynn, like Randy Johnson, maybe, and like Roger Clemens, and you know.
But pitchers were never cool. I don't remember a single pitcher I ever thought was cool.
I thought Jack McDowell was cool.
I know why you thought he was cool.
Because I read somewhere that he was friends with Pearl Jam. And like to play with they were friends, and sometimes he'd come over for jam sessions at the studio, and he had a cool goatee.
And he flicked off the crowd. Remember that? He got suspended for flicking off the crowd.
Yeah, he did. He did. I thought Jack McDowell was cool. I love Tony Gwynn, but I even remember as a kid knowing Tony Gwynn wasn't cool.
No, I never thought Tony Gwynn was cool.
I really liked him as a player, and thought he was, because I saw a guy who's 5'9". I'm like, well, maybe I could play. You know, he doesn't look superhuman. A good example of one guy being cool and one being not is summer of 98. Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. You've got Mark McGwire, who's so awkward socially and just weird and kind of a dork. Yeah. And then you got Sammy Sosa, who's just oozing charisma out of
his
body.
And now, 20 years later, it's the other way around.
And now it's
like, now everybody kind of likes Mark weird McGwire guy. And Sammy Sosa's this weirdo.
And now Sammy is whiter than Mark McGwire. Yeah.
He looks like a vampire, and Mark McGwire is settled into a nice career.
I'll tell you,
you know, coaching.
Two dudes that I think were super cool, and that is Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. Joe Montana with the cowboy hat, Jerry Rice. Everybody wanted to be Joe and Jerry.
Yeah, that's
and then
a good take. Yeah.
And then, I don't know, fellas. Like, this is before my time. I know Walter Payton was cool. There's no doubt Walter Payton.
I thought Brett Favre
was
cool.
A little before
as shit.
My time.
I thought he was.
See, I never thought Favre was that cool. I thought Favre was really good, but like cool. I don't think I ever had him in that category. I did have, for me, Barry Sanders was cool, but I don't know that Barry Sanders was nationally cool as much as Barry Sanders was really good.
He was the kind of like Tony Gwynn. He was anti-cool, so that made it cool.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like, he was amazing, and then he'd score, and he'd hand the ball to the ref.
Yeah.
I see. I kind of feel that way. Like, Josh, you mentioned Tiger Woods. I feel that way a little bit about Tiger. Like, I don't remember Tiger being cool. I remember Tiger making golf cool.
Everybody
liking golf because of Tiger.
Yeah. He's pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
Pretty fall. Like before the fall of Tiger.
Yeah.
He was robotic and would never give any, very much like a Bill Belichick press conference.
I mean, people wanted to wear Tiger gear and get the Nike Tiger stuff, and like he was cool, I guess, in that sense, but like he wasn't like walk in a room and everybody that he's just dripping sauce, you know, like JT talks
like,
about, you know,
cool
like,
guy.
And maybe he was, but he just didn't come across that way.
I think he was in private, but his press conferences and interviews were
I would say Emmitt Smith was cooler than Barry. But when I was a kid, I liked Barry more than Emmitt Smith. But like,
and see, I thought Emmitt Smith was all like really straight laced and just like not cool. Just like he was the hand me the rock and let me win the game. Now, Michael Irvin had the swag and the sauce,
cool.
but like he probably was snorting the sauce too. Like that was the only problem with Michael. You know?
Randy Moss made wearing a bunch of purple look really,
yes,
really
he did.
Cool. When he came out as a rookie in 98 and that Vikings team that lost to the Falcons.
I remember that. Yeah.
Went 15-1. And when he, I think it was about 2000, might have been the year where he mooned the
yeah.
Green Bay fans, and they said, "How are you going to pay your next fine?" He says, "Straight cash, homie."
This is like, just disgusting, Joe Buck.
Like, what a cool guy. Randy Moss just seemed like a guy that, like, not only was really good, like a superhuman wide receiver, but also, and now Randy Moss has completely, like, he seemed very off the field issues. He had trouble in college, was a, you know, a troubled kid, and now he, like, he's West Virginia and likes to, he talks like this and likes to go fishing.
And NASCAR. Owns a NASCAR.
NASCAR and fishing.
Yeah.
I was like,
so,
didn't see that coming.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
He became cool. This is what's weird. People now look at Ray Lewis, and I think that most people now think Ray Lewis was super cool. Ray Lewis was so scary that I don't think he was that cool until he was older. After the gun thing and somebody get murdered and Ray sort of having a part in it, I don't know all the details of that.
It was a stabbing. I think it was a stabbing.
Stabbing. Okay. Sorry, stabbing. Not a good thing. So, you know, after that, it was somehow that actually made Ray less scary. Somehow. I don't know how. But, like, after that was when Ray, to me, got cooler. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Like, I could see that. Like, I could see, like, because the dance, you know, he does and all that. And,
yeah.
And he was just such a, like, intense. I guess our generation, like, we never saw Dick Butkus play.
Yeah.
But you hear about Dick Buck being just the most intense, and that's kind of like our generation would be like Ray Lewis, like scary middle linebacker, just going to knock your head off.
Yeah,
you know, kind of dude.
Ray Nitschke.
Definitely our generation's version of that. You said Joe Montana. Joe Montana was
He was swag. Like
a cool name.
He was swag.
I mean, just cool.
He was guy. Our. He was the closest thing to Joe Namath that our generation ever had. For me, like in football.
Yeah, right. Of being like, you just want to be Joe Montana.
Okay.
Always won the big games.
So, I think this guy was cool. Let me hear your take and we'll wrap up on this note. John Daly.
Oh, yeah.
I think John Daly's awesome. Like, yeah.
Have you met us? Definitely of course cool. We love John Daly. Like our hero.
But was he cool? Was
JT's
he cool
probably
when
got
you
a giant
younger,
John
though.
Daly poster in his bedroom. You know?
No, JT.
I read his autobiography about three or four
JT
times.
JT doesn't have his poster.
Awesome.
JT has some of the pants. I can guarantee you he's got some.
I do want some of those.
John Daly's
I
cool
definitely
shit,
want some
man.
Of those. Yeah, he is awesome. So John Daly, he won the 91 PGA. He was a no-name golfer and was like the fifth alternate to make the tournament. Like, didn't qualify. And then, like, all these people, this guy got the flu and this guy got this, blah, 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 blah. And so he was like the first alternate or second alternate or something like that. And he and his wife at the time were like, well, let's drive up there. It was somewhere like Indianapolis or something. Just on the odd chance of I get into the tournament. And he gets a call at like 4 a.m. at the hotel and somebody's wife is going into labor and they're going home. They're having to drop out of the tournament. You're in. You're the last guy in the field. And back in the day, you didn't have cell phones to leave messages. You had locker room attendants.
Uh-huh.
And so coming into Sunday, John Daly's leading the pack. He's leading the PGA. This guy no one knows. And he gets into his locker to change, and there's a note hanging in the locker. He opens up, pulls down the note, and says, "Go get him, Big John, Jack."
Oh, my God.
He still keeps that. He keeps it on his like in his wallet to this day.
Oh, that's
he's
awesome.
Like, how cool of Jack Nicklaus to think of who am I? You know, no name kid from Darnedale, Arkansas, John Daly and Jack.
That's awesome.
Go get a Big John. Jack. That's awesome.
Cool.
That is
how
awesome.
Cool is that? You know, I thought that is an awesome kind of thing to do, man. That's cool.
You know who would
let's wrap it up on that.
You know who would be really popular if? Oh, sorry. No, we let's
no. Go ahead. Go ahead.
If his sport was more popular and played more often, I think Usain Bolt would be, like, massive.
Yeah.
Do you okay, so Usain Bolt would be massive.
He's cool as shit.
Do you remember Carl – what was his last name?
Carl Lewis?
Lewis.
Yeah.
Carl
yeah.
Lewis was massive.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Only
God.
Only thing you remember about him, though, is National Anthem, though. First thing you think of is that National Anthem he sung and his voice cracked.
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh, I don't remember
oh,
that.
Oh, look up Carl Lewis National Anthem. It's abysmal.
Yeah.
And Michael – remember – we'll probably remember this because the Olympics were in Atlanta. But remember Michael Johnson and the gold shoes?
Oh, yeah, the gold shoes.
Yeah,
he ran.
That was a big... Yeah. You got to try to make track and field interesting. You have to be a character to bring interest
to sport.
Both,
though, man.
I've never only care about 4 years.
I've never enjoyed watching an Olympic athlete like I have Usain Bolt. Like, maybe Sean White, you know? But, like, Usain Bolt.
Do you remember Dan and Dave?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, Dan and Dave. Yeah, sure do.
Pentathlon?
Decathlon, whatever.
Did like the 20 events or whatever. Dan and Dave.
I mean, Michael Phelps is the only reason you care about swimming, but Michael Phelps is just kind of dorky. You know?
Super dorky.
Kind of guy who grows up being a competitive swimmer.
I bet Michael Phelps and Gronk are like the same person separated at birth somehow. Like, they're probably like brothers separated at birth.
It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, they're
basically the same. Like, they both want to smoke weed and be in college is really what it comes down to. Hey, thanks for listening to this week's Not Combination. Go get them, Big John. That's our message for you guys as we wrap up this episode. Go get them, Big John. Whatever you got going on this week, go get them, Big John. And thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for spending the time. If you'd like to support Not Combination, you can visit and do so at patreon.com/knockcombination. Help us keep the show afloat and doing cool new things all the time. We got some new swag right around the corner, so keep an eye out for that. Visit, if you'd like to go ahead and shop the swag that we already have, you can do so at shop.spreadshirt.com/knockcombination. And if you can't buy swag, if you can't be a patron at this time, the best thing you can do to support the show is to listen, to like, to share with your friends, and to subscribe. And don't forget to leave a review. Josh loves to send out baseball cards based on the quality of your review. And so all you have to do is leave a review, take a little screenshot of it, send it to Josh via Twitter or Facebook, and he'll be happy to connect with you and send you a baseball card. Thanks for listening this week, guys. JT, Josh, final words?
I'm tired.
Tired.
I have a baby that keeps me up all night. Mm. Sleepy.
Tell Mallory hey, then.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.